Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brock and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. If you desire to speak to the host, please press 1 at any time, and the host will be notified that there is a caller in queue. Otherwise, please hold and you will be able to listen to the show.
In the second and third half hours of our two-hour segment today, this is Thursday, April 11th, 2013. We're delighted to have you with us, and this is a show that combines a prior show, Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S., with Homeopathy World Community and Freedomizer Radio. We're delighted and privileged to be talking to both audiences from the Freedomizer Radio network. The first half hour, we typically talk about some issues concerning vaccine rights issues, and I want to talk about a couple of emails I've gotten from people recently. Had an email from Tony in California talking about a current California bill, AB 599. And there is, I think I talked at length last week about this. If you go to the NVIC, the National Vaccine Information Center Advocacy Portal at nvicadvocacy.org, that's nvicadvocacy.org, they list the pending bills, current bills in states around the country that have to do with vaccines, and there's dozens of bills, 1 to 6 bills in each of more than 30 states right now. So this is a very active topic in state legislatures around the country, vaccine issues and laws, and I won't repeat all the things we talked about before, but let me see. One of the things that Tony in California asks, he said, I've heard that some hospitals will insist on giving a tetanus shot if you end up in the emergency room. Are you familiar with this practice? And if so, what advice do you have on it? And this is a really good point. It's one that comes up from time to time for me over the years. It's an important one. A lot of people, they end up in the emergency room for themselves or with a child in the emergency room. Children have accidents all the time. Of course, that's a very common place, if unfortunate, for parents to end up. And the Tony's absolutely right. Just about any kind of injury you come into the emergency room with, they want to give you a tetanus shot, but especially if it's a deep gash or wound kind of injury. And that's just sort of the knee-jerk reaction or reflex there. I don't think there's any clear one formulaic way to approach this situation, but I want to talk about some of the different factors here or some of the different considerations. You need to understand, and I think most listeners already do, that when you're talking with doctors, the vast majority of the time, they're coming from a position that has a foregone conclusion that you're going to be vaccinated or you certainly should be vaccinated. And part of that is that they don't want to have any sort of liability or negative feedback from their peers or the profession for you not being vaccinated. They will sometimes take some heat for that. And I've even heard instances reported where doctors get kickbacks, get financial payments if they have certain percentages of their patients vaccinated, if they reach certain vaccination benchmarks. You know, no conflict of interest there, is there, folks? So the doctor really isn't free in that situation to consult with you objectively about whether any particular vaccine is appropriate for you or your child. So that's a fundamental problem right there. But in the emergency room, you're often going to be pressured into getting a tetanus vaccine. Now, I don't believe most of the time, if ever, that that's necessarily a legal requirement, like it's required to get certain vaccines for school enrollment and unless you exercise an exemption. I'm not sure that this is really an exemption issue in a formal sense. So if you already have an exemption, you know, a lot of times they'll say, and they'll just take advantage of the fact that they have you there for something beyond just the tetanus shot. They'll say, are you up to date on your vaccines? And a lot of people who have vaccine exemptions feel like in order to answer that question honestly, they have to say, well, no, I'm not, because we have an exemption. So anytime you open the door for doctors to argue with you or pressure you into vaccinating, you can expect that you'll get that. And I think the idea here is, and the purpose of the question is there a way to avoid that altogether? Who wants to get in an argument with a doctor about anything if it's avoidable and you can get what you need without doing that? And I just want to suggest, for starters, then, that you're not being dishonest if you're exercising an exemption, and if a doctor then asks you, are you up to date with your vaccines? Yes, you are up to date with your vaccines. Being up to date with your vaccines, at least from a legal perspective, means you are in compliance with the law about vaccines. And if you are getting all the legally required vaccines, you're up to date. If you're exercising an exemption, you are in compliance with the law, if it's a properly exercised exemption. And so there's no reason to open up invite a further discussion. You just say, yes, we're up to date with our vaccines. You're not being dishonest if you're exercising an exemption and you say you're up to date with vaccines. Now, that's the legal assessment, meaning that you are not legally required to do anything more than you've already done, so yes, you're up to date. If you still feel uncomfortable with that, you know, do follow your conscience on this, but I don't see any problem with somebody saying yes to that question, even though they're not getting vaccines, so long as they're in compliance with the law, as long as they're exercising an exemption. If, however, you have religious objections and you get into a discussion beyond, you know, somehow the doctor probes or you answer in a way that they recognize that you haven't gotten vaccines, the last thing you want to do is get into a debate about the, most people anyway, get into a debate about the merits or lack thereof of vaccines. Now, there are occasionally people who have lots of good information on the tip of their tongue, they've done their research, and if you had a doctor who expressed some ability to hear what you had to say, if you want to be an educator in that situation, go for it. But I think the likelihood that you're going to find somebody in an emergency room who wants to take time to listen carefully to your research findings is pretty slim. It's just not something that's likely to happen very often. So, and most people would prefer to avoid a conflict if they can. And for the most part, I certainly support that, recommend that. Conflict doesn't usually accomplish anything except to make people upset emotionally and to spend time and energy that nobody really has or wants to spend on that anyway. So one way, though, if you aren't able to sort of nip that in the bud by saying, yes, we're up to date with our vaccines, thank you, end of story, you just say, it's against our religious beliefs, if of course that's true for you. And, you know, a doctor may try to argue with that. And I think the best response to whatever they say is something like, well, I really appreciate your concern, we just have to leave this to God. Because you really can't argue with God. You really can't argue with a person's belief in God. I mean, you can try to, but if you allow such a conversation or interaction to digress into, well, did you know about this study or did you know about this particular corruption event or this particular fact or whatever, the people on the other side of this are not in a position to hear and respond objectively and fairly and openly to what you have to offer them, with possibly rare exceptions. But as a general rule, they're not. Even if they could hear what you are saying, it would be professionally risky for them to endorse your point of view. So again, it's just better usually in that situation not to have the fight at all. But if you end up with any sort of fight, and if you have religious objections, make it be about God, because it's really hard to argue with that. They may roll their eyes. They may walk away saying, we got a live one here. They may say, well, you're an idiot to put other people at risk. But, you know, when push comes to shove, if you say, well, you know, I really appreciate your good intentions, but, you know, God wins, I have to put my faith in God, then that should, with any halfway reasonable professional, in the debate. It may not make anybody happy, but, you know, the goal here is not to be happy. The goal is to get whatever emergency treatment you need, and then everybody gets on with their lives from there. So that's a good thing to keep in mind. But there's another aspect to this issue which is a little more insidious and a little more complicated. And the reality is, whether we like it or not, the state does have authority to intervene into the family if there are what the state considers to be legitimate grounds to believe that you are not taking proper medical care of your child. And this is sort of a disturbing component to this discussion from my point of view, because as a starting place, as a basic concept, I think the state has to have that authority. There are situations where parents are mentally ill or for one reason or another incompetent. They're not taking proper care of their kids. The kids are suffering. Somebody needs to step in and help those children. And when there are legitimate situations of neglect or abuse, we need the state to have authority to step in and help those children. At least I think most people would agree with that. The question is not whether that in an absolute sense is good or bad, right or wrong. The question is, where are the boundaries? Who gets to decide what constitutes neglect or abuse, and who gets to make the call? And unfortunately, doctors, medical doctors, are the authorities on health issues, and they get to make those calls, at least to the extent that a doctor can decide that you're not doing proper treatment for your child, the child is at risk, you know, I'm going to call social services, and based on my expert authority and opinion, social services can then act and come remove a child from the family and so forth. And there have been some pretty ridiculous situations involving vaccines where kids have actually been taken away from the family. There was a reported case in Pennsylvania several weeks ago, maybe a few months ago at this point, where the mother refused the hepatitis B vaccine in the hospital, and they ended up taking the baby away from the mother. I think the most obvious problem with that kind of situation, I can't really comment about any specific situation unless I have more information than you can get from articles on the internet, but let's talk about that kind of situation generally. You know, is an infant at imminent risk of harm if the mother refuses a hepatitis B vaccine? Probably not. And I think that's the general standard. You know, if there's not some serious harm already occurring or an imminent risk of serious harm, there's really not a basis for social services to step in and take a child away. But they have to assess levels of risk, and the specific thresholds, the specific laws, specific boundaries are going to vary from state to state, and there's a certain amount of discretionary authority with individual social workers. They have to assess the information that comes to them. They have to decide whether it constitutes a level of concern that warrants them intervening, and if so, in what way, and so forth. So the specific criteria are going to vary from state to state. The assessment is going to vary from situation to situation and person to person, family to family, and so forth. So it's real hard to come up with general rules that you can quickly and easily apply to everyone in every situation. But the ultimate question here, to get back to the hospital emergency room setting, would it be possible, if someone in the emergency room refused a vaccine, that a doctor might interpret that as putting a child at imminent risk of harm, and the doctor might call or bring in social services or child protective services to take the child away and see if they can forcibly vaccinate the child? Now, I've never heard of that happening, but it is I think it's hypothetically possible. And so, you know, when you're dealing with emergency room doctors, I think you have to, I guess, ultimately, like anything in life, you have to take it one step at a time, see how things play out, respond, you know, as you see fit, see best to do as it plays out. But I don't say that because I want to put people, scare people, or have people be paranoid about going to the emergency room. I don't, you know, if you've got a real emergency, go to the emergency room. But I do think it's something to keep in the back of our minds that ultimately the medical community does have that power and authority over us. And we hear this play out in some disturbing ways for people who are strong supporters of alternative and complementary healthcare. For example, if a medical doctor says, your child's illness requires this medical procedure, and you say, no, thank you, I'm going to go use, you know, an acupuncturist or some other medical, some other form of treatment that maybe the medical doctor deems to be inappropriate, there is a potential risk in those kinds of situations for, if it's a serious enough health problem, for doctors to feel like they have to intervene for the sake of the child. And doctors make the call. You know, a social worker isn't going to decide if the healthcare situation is severe enough that they have to intervene. It's the doctor that's going to make that call. It's the social worker who will do the actual intervening, but it's the doctor who will make the medical call, a medical doctor who will make the medical call. And so we need to be mindful of that kind of thing. This is probably ultimately a legislative agenda item. We need to get laws passed around the country in every state that draw proper boundaries, that allow parents more flexibility than many of us have, many parents have at this point in time, to make decisions concerning medical treatments of our children. You know, one thing you can do is in many situations, is ask for a second opinion, because there are some medical doctors who will support some of the so-called alternative and complementary approaches to healthcare issues. But these are complex issues without simple answers, and there are those occasions where parents find themselves in very difficult situations because they want to do something that a medical doctor will not endorse. So that can cause some difficulties. Well, maybe enough of that for this point. Let me see what else I've got here. Had a pediatric chiropractor, also from California. Glad to have folks in California listening to the shows. He says, I often talk, he says you, meaning me, you often talk about federal protection of religious freedoms for employees under Title VII. And he's referring to Title VII of the 1964 Federal Civil Rights Act. It's a federal law that requires employers to accommodate their employees' religious beliefs and practices, and unless it's going to cause undue hardship for the employer. And he asks, Dr. Perez asks, is there any similar federal law protecting religious freedom for students or parents of students who have children attending public schools? Or does that fall entirely under state law? It's a really good question. The federal civil rights law, there are several different titles to that, and I'm not familiar, frankly, with the other titles. I've been narrowly focused on Title VII, which deals with employers and employees, and in fact, there are many different potential grounds for discrimination in the workplace, and I'm focused primarily on just religion. So I have a really narrow focus of the broader federal law there. But for purposes of my work with vaccine exemptions and waivers, one of the really wonderful things about religious exemptions for those who qualify, and if I can get back to it today, I'll come back in a little bit and talk about what qualifies. That's not a short answer question, but maybe I can give you an introduction. But even when your starting place is a state law, which is the case when you're dealing with school exemptions in any of the 50 states, the federal government does not have authority to mandate vaccines for state residents. It's a limitation in the federal constitution. So the CDC, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is a federal agency, can only make recommendations for vaccines, and then it's up to the individual states to decide whether they're going to enact laws consistent in full or in part with the CDC recommendations. So we have different vaccine requirements and different exemption laws in all the different states as it pertains to state matters, in particular here for our purposes right now, school exemptions. But nevertheless, whenever a state passes a law creating a religious exemption, you have, of course, a state law right under that state law, but that right automatically comes with federal constitutional protections as well. And in particular, it's the federal Constitution's First Amendment, what's called the free exercise of religion. And this is a really good thing. See, originally the U.S. Constitution only applied to the federal government. Federal Constitution, federal government. And every state has its own state constitution. But there were a series of Supreme Court cases over, I don't know, roughly the last 100 years or so, maybe a little more at this point, where the court, through a series of cases, determined that certain so-called fundamental rights within the federal constitution apply to state and local governments as well. And this, the court reasoned, is because of the federal constitution's 14th Amendment, and in particular the due process clause of the 14th Amendment. So these fundamental rights, a small but profound portion of the federal constitution that also applies to state and local governments includes the First Amendment. And the First Amendment has, among other things, the free exercise of religion. So when you exercise a school exemption with a state law under state statute and or state health department regulations, and in most states you really need to look at a combination of the statutes and the regulations to see what the rights are. When you're exercising religious exemption, you of course have state law rights under the state law, but the religious exemptions come with federal First Amendment rights as well. And this is a great thing because federal law is a higher legal authority than state law. For example, there are exceptions everywhere in law, but as a general rule, when there's a conflict between state and federal law wins. Federal law trumps state law if there's a conflict between the two. Federal law supersedes the state law. So this is terrific because there are a number of situations where having that additional federal First Amendment right that you have with a state religious exemption that you don't have with a state philosophical exemption, for example. There are times when having that additional federal constitutional right, that federal First Amendment right, can be very helpful, can make the difference. So I want to encourage folks to keep that in mind. Now, just a couple of quick words about qualifying for religious exemption. I mean, I spend 2 hours or more in consultations explaining this in detail with my clients, but just as a basic starting point, when we say what qualifies for religious exemption, another way to look at this, and maybe the better way to look at it in terms of the legal analysis is, well, what beliefs are protected by law? And do any of my beliefs fall under that umbrella? Because it turns out that the way the law defines religion is much broader than the way most of us think of religion in sort of typical common sense terms. So just a very quick starting point here on the topic. Just about anybody who is not an atheist can potentially qualify for a vaccine religious exemption. It is literally that broad. Doesn't matter whether you belong to church, doesn't matter what church you belong to. If you do, if your personal religious beliefs are opposed to vaccines, then many times, if not most of the time, you can potentially qualify for vaccine religious exemption. So the good news is the door is pretty wide open as a starting point, at least, in terms of who can qualify. Now, I don't know if you want to call it good news, bad news, or not, but the bad news, if that's what it is, or the flip side of this is, if you're in a situation where you have to state your beliefs, and not everybody is, and it, for example, with some state school exemptions, you just check a box, sign a form, write a short statement, and you're done. But in many states and other contexts, such as in the military for military exemptions or immigration waivers or employees who are dealing with the federal civil rights law, and in these situations and in at least some state religious exemption procedures, you do have to state your beliefs. And that's a place where it gets a little bit trickier, because the way the law works as it pertains to what specific beliefs do and don't qualify is just not always consistent with most people's common sense approach to the subject. Let me give you a quick example. And one of the ways we know what the boundaries are is we look at federal court cases, the legal precedent. So there's a federal court case that says if you copy a statement from someone else or somewhere else, that's insincere, and therefore it can be rejected. So if you're in a situation where you have to state your beliefs and the authorities involved have authority to scrutinize your beliefs, the last thing you want to do is go out to one of these otherwise absolutely wonderful anti-vaccine websites and copy one of their sample letters or sample forms or sample affidavits or what have you, because if the folks on the other side do their research and do a little looking, they can reject you. The concept is valid at least up to a point. It's kind of like somebody says, oh, your exemption was accepted, let me write what you wrote because I want mine to be accepted too. But, you know, we can understand why that might happen. And if you're just writing something to get the exemption and not because it comes from you and is really your beliefs, then it makes sense that really the law shouldn't protect those beliefs. Now, a lot of people copy who are as sincere as you can be, so here's where the problem is. Even if you are sincere, if you copy legally, you're not sincere, and so legally they can reject you, and the underlying reality that you were truly sincere risks going by the wayside. So don't copy. But anyway, we can go into more depth and detail another time. We're due for a break here. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. I'm vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, talking to you from Asheville, North Carolina. I'm going to take a short break here for about 4 or 5 minutes, and we'll be back for another hour looking at some vaccine news and issues with my wonderful co-host, founder of Homeopathy World Community, Debbie Bruck. So, folks, do stay with us. We will be back before you know it.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Antiwarteeth.com is to promote anti-war activism, unlocking minds and shattering paradigms. By purchasing one of these t-shirts, you become an anti-war activist. www.antiwarteeth.com, bringing peace and human rights to the mainstream. Buy it, wear it, become it. Anti-War Teeth.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing.
Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com.
But wait. There's more.
You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Get ready for the epic movie documentary adventure ride of your life. Shade, the motion picture. A view into the globalist domain. And Embellus and Burma's film.
Nothing in this world works the way you think it does. Nothing. Governments do not operate the way you think they do. Banks do not do what you think they do. The police department is not here for what you think it is. Nothing in your world works the way you think it does.
We have to let them know that their world government has been identified, and they thought they just clawed the world economy to bring in a worldwide police state, but instead, it's going to bring them down.
You have to stand up. Speak up, speak out.
See the motion picture. Order your copy of the DVD today at SheeTheMotionPicture.com.
Hello everyone, Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now, as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants. I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it. Silver Leaf Tea.
We are Critical Immunity with Larry and Renee. Our show will cover current events, national health news, nutrition, emergency preparedness, and organic farming, and various implements and tools to thrive and survive. We hope you tune in and join in our discussion of health, liberty, preparedness, and survival. Join our hosts, Larry and Renee, with guest callers always welcome.
We are back. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips from Asheville, North Carolina, and my wonderful co-host with the most, Ms. Debbie Bark, founder of Homeopathy World Community. How are you doing today, Debbie?
Doing good. Anybody living in North Carolina notice a little yellow stuff around? It's the pollen. We're coated in yellow all over your cars and your windows and everything.
So is this fallout? Did it finally happen? They let the big one go, or?
Oh, so you're not getting that problem up in Asheville?
No, I have it here. It just concerns me. I remember there's an old Peanuts comic strip once where one of the characters, I don't know, maybe it was Linus, who says, "It finally happened, just like they said it would," you know, and he's looking at the snow falling and he's mistaking it for fallout. I can't do justice to a cartoon over the air, but basically one character is saying, "It's finally happened, here's all the fallout," and the other one says, "Of course it's happening, it's snowing. What else did you expect this time of year?"
It's all upon your interpretation of what information you have and what you think it is, and that's the way, you know, whatever we talk about, vaccines, and, you know, what you were talking about earlier in the show makes me concerned that when you enter a hospital and you have rights that you can waive certain things, you can waive procedures, that they're taking away your right by forcing you, or by what you were saying, the doctors are the authorities. They're the ones who know the way to deal with certain situations or supposed health issues, and therefore they're the ones who are going to determine what kind of treatment you're going to get, procedures you're going to get, whether or not you really want them for you or your family. So it's kind of a catch-22.
Well, let me clarify. I think there's pretty broad authority for adults to refuse treatment if they want to do that. The only exceptions there have to do with the infectious disease arena, and even there, I don't think there's really the authority to physically hold you down and inject you with a vaccine if you just absolutely refuse. They're supposed to quarantine you or isolate you or whatever they think, you know, they have to do and have authority to do. Although I have heard the occasional anecdotal story where somebody was physically forced to get a vaccine, so what authority they may have and what authority they may exercise may not always be the same thing. But it's with regard to children that the state says, you know, wait, you can, you know, you can go off and die yourself if you want to, but we're not going to let you do that with your kids. And it's under the presumed idea, and probably the actual belief with many people, that if you don't do the allopathic recommended way, let's say, if you don't do it the allopathic way, the medical doctor's way, that there's this belief that you're necessarily abusing your child and somebody has to step in and save this poor child from you horrible parent. The problem with this, of course, is that there's a lot of politics involved in terms of deciding what really is or isn't an appropriate therapy or treatment. And we have a lot of really good treatments, and many times more effective and safer and less costly than the allopathic route. So, you know, like as I was saying earlier, it's the question is who gets to decide and what's the criteria they're deciding on? And, you know, is it set up in a way that's really intended to do what's best for the child? And my answer to that is no. It's set up in a way to establish and maintain the dominance of the allopathic model to the detriment of people who can do better if they, in many instances, if they choose a different modality.
Yeah, and one of the things is I feel like they have put a muzzle or a handcuff or something on the physicians themselves, because there are specific protocols they are deemed allowed to do, required to do. If they don't do them, they could be sued. And therefore, they're under the gun to perform these specific things, which are very costly for one thing, and perhaps even not necessary. If the physician looks at the patient and does a physical and says this is their determination, and yet because certain, if they write in their notes that they have certain things, they are so required to go through specific procedures. That's when they end up, you end up with thousands of dollars in your hospital bill. And just the thought of being able to use some simple homeopathic remedies to reduce anxiety, to lessen stress, to get a heart rhythm going, to stop bleeding, to do all sorts of things is not allowed. And that's a problem.
Well, and it makes sense to me that there be some set of criteria. So as I'm listening to you talk, I'm thinking the idea of criteria doesn't, in and of itself, doesn't bother me. But then again, the question becomes, who writes the criteria? Who controls what the criteria is? And is it something that's done truly and honestly from a place of what's going to lead to the best treatment the most, you know, most of the time, or the most, the highest percentage of the time? Or, you know, is it really written in such a way
as
to, is it promoting another agenda? And so, because I think, you know, probably many, if not most medical doctors probably really believe that what they have, because this is how they're trained, you know, that their way really is the best way. Now, there's a certain amount of arrogance that is disturbingly common with the territory as well. The I know best and anything else is automatically wrong because, you know, I'm, you know, the ego's involved there. But I think most doctors, whatever their ego's levels or characters are, really do want to do the best thing. They're just many of them operating on something less than complete or accurate information. And so I think therein lies the bigger part of the problem. You know, I had a real interesting day yesterday, Debbie. There's a documentary team from Australia who is currently traveling around the country, and they're interviewing people on both sides of the vaccine issue. And I had the great pleasure and privilege of being interviewed yesterday to add whatever I can add to that. And if they see something as useful for their documentary, then perhaps they'll use some of the footage they took of me. But it was interesting. I had at least brief conversation, and they've interviewed some of the heavy hitter mainstream pro-vaccine people. I mean, these guys have a lot more guts than I do. I couldn't handle that. But they're doing their job well as in terms of the creation of a documentary. They're not just going to show one side. They're going to show what different people are saying. And what was interesting to me to hear what they have heard so far from the people in the pro-vaccine camp, and they're interviewing some of the top people in the country on the issue. top pro-vaccine people on the issue. So they're going to the top, and then they're also hitting, you know, a lot of the key, as many as they can get to, a lot of the key players, as I might call them, in the alternative vaccine camp. And they were just perplexed at what they're hearing from these so-called experts in the pro-vaccine arena. One person they spoke with at a major medical university just in the last couple of days, and I'm going to, forgive me, I'm not going to name names here because I don't want to, this is sort of hearsay. I don't know what would or wouldn't be okay with them for me to say or not say at this point. I'll let them put together their documentary and show what they want to show, you know, but in their final product. But we had a major mainstream medical person who denied the existence of a vaccine court here in the U.S. Now, we do have a court system here in the U.S. that was designed specifically for doing vaccine injury cases. You can't take a vaccine injury case anywhere else to any other court. You've got to go to this court system in Washington, D.C., that's part of the Federal Court of Claims and is loosely referred to as, or informally, as the vaccine courts. How could a mainstream top dog in the medical community who's out there researching and promoting and profiting from vaccines and the vaccine industry not be aware of the vaccine court system? Now, I don't so much, I mean, that's perplexing. But I'll tell you, Debbie, I'm going to bend way over backwards here to give this fella benefit of the doubt. I don't have nearly so much a problem with somebody who says, I don't have any information on that or I don't know anything about that. I have a great deal of trouble with people who invent reality to fill their own information gaps. So if this doctor had said, well, I don't know about that or I'm not aware of that or I don't have any information on that, I would be very concerned, but I would say at least he's being honest. How could he not know that? But even if he doesn't, at least he's being honest about it. But for to just flat out deny the existence of something which is a fundamental part of the entire controversy. Anyway, I don't want to go off too far and too much longer on a tangent, but suffice it to say that he said in talking to pro-vaccine people, he hears the same nonsense over and over from these people, which is directly contradicted by the evidence. And I expect the final documentary will reveal that quite clearly. They'll show, or certainly I would if I were doing such a documentary, although I think it'd be hard for me to be objective or at least to be perceived as being objective. But if you show a mainstream medical doctor saying X, and then you bring in an alternative medical doctor or other person in the alternative community who says, well, here's the published study that says Y, or here's the government data that says Y, or here's the information on the Department of Justice website that shows that, you know, the pharmaceutical industries are getting billions of dollars in criminal fines every year or what have you. You know, that sort of thing will speak for itself. So I'm looking forward to see that, to seeing what their final final project ends up being. But well, let me reel myself
right.
in
so,
here.
So I would like to talk about the article you sent me. If that's okay with you.
Yeah, let's go for it.
The homeopathy is under attack in California. And I also would like to make a note that homeopathy has always been under attack around the world.
Pretty much everywhere, right?
Yes, but I think that it is coming to more than ever at this time in history. Because people are, I have some sort of a figure, something like 300 million people are using homeopathy around the world, which means that they're taking business away from the regular medical, conventional type of medicine. And so people are actually becoming enlightened, aware, their eyes are opening, and they're learning quite a bit. So I want to make a mention of a couple things that are going on, and if this is on Homeopathy World Community on Facebook. I have put two petitions. One is the support of homeopathy in the UK. The Glasgow Homeopathic Hospital has been under fire to remove their funding, and that has been in existence since the 1800s. It has performed and helped so many people who don't want to go through traditional medicine. So this is something where you just click a button and help support them through the fact that you're listening, telling the people there that there is concern. The second one is just came up yesterday, support homeopathy in France. And this is similar to a problem that we're having in many parts of the world regarding the supposed safety of drugs or safety of nutritionals or supplements or homeopathy, and who is going to have control over that. So there is the possibility that they're removing homeopathic remedies from the shelves, from store shelves, from access to the general population. You know, homeopathy is over-the-counter, gentle healing, safe, non-toxic, no side effects. You can go on and on. It works for acute and chronic disease, and it has always done so for hundreds of years. So the fact that they're trying to take it off the market and make it inaccessible is really sad, and we have to stand up for this. Now, you have sent me an article that has to do with homeopathy under attack in California. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and what's going on?
Sure. You're the homeopathic educator of the two of us here. I'm a fan of homeopathy, but that's as far as I can. That's the extent of my mm-hmm. claim to fame with homeopathy.
You want me to talk? One of the things that happens is that the allopathic pharmaceuticals sometimes try to get under the wire and say that their medications are homeopathic when they're really not. They might be combinations of drugs, and they might throw in something that's slightly homeopathic as a remedy. But I will tell you and teach anyone who is listening, homeopathy is a dynamic relationship between the individual, not a group, unless it is a contagious disease, but it is an individual and the remedy itself. It's not one drug heals everybody. You know, you just can't pick a remedy off the shelf, and because it has a name on the label that it says is for hay fever, think that it's going to take care of your hay fever. That is not true. You have to go through the procedure of observing and documenting the history, the etiology of the sickness, and what are the specific, unique, peculiar and symptoms that an individual has in order to select what's called a similimum, the matching remedy. So
let me throw in a quick example here, just because I have the layperson's okay. perspective here on this. As for example, you could have 10 different people who are all diagnosed in an allopathic diagnosis with the same disease or condition. You could have 10 people who all have I don't know if this is the best example, but just say who all have measles. They'd all get the same diagnosis.
No, you're talking about a contagious disease. Let's talk about hay fever.
Well, let me finish, and then you tell me if I'm wrong here, of course. But I'll leave it in the generic. You could have 10 people who all have the same diagnosis allopathically. They all are said to have the same condition, whatever it would be, infectious disease,
migraine,
or otherwise.
Migraine, rash, whatever. Okay.
Right. You tell me I think it would apply to infectious disease, but you tell me if I'm wrong there. But in any event, if you look at each person individually and compare with one another, you're going to find there are at least some subtle differences in the total picture from person to person, even if a medical doctor would give them all the same diagnosis. You know, you all have whatever, X condition or disease.
Right.
But they're not going to all have a completely, totally identical manifestation. So there are going to be some differences, sometimes subtle, maybe not so subtle. And what the homeopath does is to look at each person individually. So you might have 10 people who all have the same label allopathically, but you might give them, you know, 1, 2, 3, 5, or even 10 different, you know, there could be a totally different remedy for each person based on the particular unique individual manifestations for each individual, whatever label might be stamped on it from an allopathic doctor. And this is,
right.
to me, what the beauty of homeopathy is that it's very personalized, very specialized. It's you know, the remedies that are chosen to treat someone are about that person at that time with their set of characteristics, manifestations, whatever. I don't know if there's other specific words that homeopathy uses to convey the concepts I'm conveying here. But just speaking in layman's terms, your particular set of manifestations or characteristics of your condition are going to suggest to the skilled homeopath one particular remedy or a very few initial choices. Sometimes they have to experiment a little bit to find exactly what remedy is the right one. But it's so personalized, and that's why it's or one aspect of it being a holistic approach is please validate or correct anything I said there, Debbie.
Yeah, you were basically saying that each person expresses the disease in their own unique way. That's
even
exactly
if there
right.
are similarities with other people with the same condition
right.
or
we
disease.
Have commonalities that say this is urticaria, this is poison ivy, this is a rash. There are commonalities of, yes, you have, quote-unquote, a migraine. But everybody knows that their migraine is unique to them. What sets it off? What are their triggers? Whether it's seasonally, whether it's what kind of stresses, how it manifests in the quality of the pain in the head. Is it thumping? Is it pressing? Is it exploding? You know, people express it in their own way, whether they are nauseous or going to the bathroom. All the different things are unique to that person. And that's what we search for, is a remedy that encompasses that uniqueness in that individual. That's why you can't just say, let's give everybody a shot. And that's going to take away the pain. We don't want to simply take away the pain. We want to look at the cause. We want to find out, why are you getting this illness? Why are you put under so much stress? And deal with it that way. Look at the core issue.
So I have a question for you, Debbie. The
yeah.
eternal argument that keeps coming up over and over again with homeopathy, and this has been dealt with, you know, over and over and over again, ad nauseum, and so it just frustrates me when I keep seeing this over and over again, but it came up again in the same article. Well,
yeah.
Obviously, homeopathy can't work because with homeopathy, you're using these extreme dilutions of these different
yeah.
substances, animal, mineral, plant, whatever substances, extreme to the point to where the probability is that there's not even a physical molecule left. That's how extreme these dilutions
mm-hmm.
are. So obviously there's nothing there that can really work. It must be a placebo if it works at all. Debbie, I suppose there could be hours of response to that, but what's your first layer or level of response to
right.
that? And then I want to offer a comment about that too, again, from the layperson's perspective. But
what are
the main arguments against that thinking or idea?
One of the things that I would like to direct folks to, because I put a lot of information on the Homeopathy World Community Facebook page, as well as the homeopathyworldcommunity.com main page. And there's a gentleman who calls himself a self-proclaimed homeopathic enthusiast. His name is John Bennett, and he has been a spokesperson, an advocate of homeopathy for many years. He has just written a most insightful and expressive article on his WordPress website that says it's the world's fastest growing medicine, and he backs it up and explains why that people will say that there's nothing in it, it's like putting a drop in the ocean. But he explains not only the fact that people around the world are using it, that billions of dollars are being spent on it, but the science behind it and the nanotechnology, the structure of water, the memory of water. It's like if you have a recording tape, and they don't really do the tape machines anymore, everything is digital, but you can erase the tapes and you can put put down a layer of sound on the tape. And you can do the same thing with water. So when you transfer the energy of a substance, whether it be plant, mineral, animal, or what, or imponderable, we have even sunlight or colors or wavelengths, and you transfer that energy to the molecule of water, which is your diluting substance, in order to process and make your homeopathic remedies, you're actually getting some form of communication. And that is what you get when you take your remedy. You're getting a form of communication. It's information. It's, I don't want to say digitalized information, but it is information in the water that's being transferred from the substance to the living organism that tells it how to begin the healing process. So when people say that there's nothing in it and it's too dilute, this is not correct, because there is quantum science to prove that water can take this information, store it, and transmit this information through the hydrogen bonded network, says John Dennis. Does that help you understand?
Oh, absolutely. That's wonderful. I mean, it sounds to me like there is still lots of room for research into the precise mechanism and how it works and all. But what you have clearly conveyed, Debbie, just in the last couple of minutes here, is that there is a means by which therapy of homeopathy can work. But there's just a couple quick points I want to say in addition to that. That first of all, this is, if I understand correctly, what one could call empirical science or empirical medicine. And what I mean by that is ultimately it doesn't matter to me anyway, as a potential consumer. Ultimately, I can't say it doesn't matter. It's a secondary concern as to what the mechanism is and how it works. You know, as a consumer of homeopathy, I just want to know whether or not it works. You know, I want to get well if I'm sick, and if this is going to help me, then I want to do that. And homeopathy has been tested over a couple hundred years or more at this point, and we have just, you know, decades and decades and decades of empirical evidence where people have particular kinds of conditions, remedies are matched up in a very precise system, although there certainly is an art to it as well, and then, you know, people get better or get well, and that's kind of the final test. You know, and the people who say, well, it's just a placebo, well, homeopathy works on babies and animals, and I think that kind of dispels the idea that it's all placebo effect. But I just wanted
Can
to say
I will also sure. mention, I'll do a little quote from John Bennett. He says, yet without validation as it now has in the material sciences, see, the thing about homeopathy, it's in essence, we understand that we are more than just a physical body. We have emotions. We have things that impinge upon us to change our chemistry and hormones based on what we think, our mentality, and our spirituality. And so homeopathy looks to the vital force, to the spirit, as where, how we live in the world. So he says it has been constant use by medical doctors for 200 years. The FDCA was sponsored by a homeopath. It outperformed allopathy, that's conventional medicine, 10-1. During the 1918 flu pandemic. The Cubans recently administered 4.5 million doses of homeopathy to stop an epidemic. And this is actually true. You know, typically when there is a hurricane in Cuba, the areas that are impacted by it have infections, have contagious disease, have leptospirosis. I don't remember the name of the disease.
Leptospirosis, yeah.
Leptospirosis. And it actually stopped it in the tracks. And the government is sponsoring this type of medicine, this type of for all the population. Now you could say, well, you don't have enough documentation, or a comparison of a control group, but you actually do, because the areas that were not getting the homeopathic remedy had a much higher increase, and the data shows there was the disease was not stopped in those areas. So,
yeah, and in that particular instance, Debbie, they not only had substantially better results than past use of conventional immunizations, it was about 1/15 the cost. And homeopathy does not have adverse effects of permanent disability and death that vaccines do. So,
or regular drugs.
Yeah, all of these are reasons to be aggressively exploring homeopathy as opposed to aggressively fighting it. But, you know, again, that just tells us that what's going on here is politics.
He's also telling us about in vivo kinds of experimentation with homeopathy, that it kills cancer cells. It stops the growth of cancer cells using homeopathy in the lab. And, I mean, I don't really purport the clinical trials of looking at it that way, because typically homeopathy has always been proven in humans. We are the
right
observers. We are the one who speak about what happens to us, and that's how we document the effects of a medicine. So the fact that it's done at a cellular level is very, quote-unquote, you know, scientific, but it also substantiates more and more that homeopathy works at every level.
Well, the politics here is conducted in an abuse of true or pure science, because what science, when it's functioning properly, does is it looks at what's going on in the world and then it seeks to find ways to explain that. And what we hear from the medical community or those folks who are opposing homeopathy, what we hear from them is, in effect, since it can't work, therefore it doesn't work. And
it can't work for them.
They say it can't work because they don't see a mechanism that convinces them that there's any explanation. It can't work because there's no physical molecule there. That's the general, you know, the mantra we hear over and over again. There's nothing left. Therefore they say it can't work, and since it can't work, it doesn't work, which is a very different thing than saying, let's test it and see whether or not it works. And then if it does work, let's see if we can figure out how or why it works. So I just want to give a real quick metaphor here. We got to run to break, Debbie, so please hold whatever your next thought or response is to after break. But to say that homeopathy doesn't work because it can't work is like saying that until humanity discovered nuclear physics, the sun didn't shine. So I'll put that thought out.
Or the earth is flat because we don't think that
right,
it's round.
Right, because we don't perceive it to be moving, and obviously isn't moving. So you can think of those metaphors for a little bit here. We've got to go to break. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S.
Can
so
I
we're
ask
having a...
you, Alan, before you do break, I'm going to do my own plug, my advertisement. Is that okay?
Go for it. That'll be the first part of our break.
First part of the break. Okay. Homeopathy World Community is partnering with an international community. It is called Darkness to Light, Stewards of Children. This partnership to the international organization educates adults how to recognize and protect children from sexual abuse. April is both National Child Abuse Prevention Month and National Sexual Assault Awareness Month. This is the time to show your commitment. And what we need is a little bit of your support to go to Homeopathy World Community. Click on the green banner that says Darkness to Light and give a little bit to help us train. And as we get trained, we will be able to provide information and classes or webinars to the public to learn how you can help protect children. Okay, go on to the next.
And Debbie, what's the website address there?
Go to homeopathyworldcommunity.com, and you will see a green banner that says Darkness to Light.
Yes, and it's all those words spelled out, Homeopathy World Community.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for that, Debbie. I just want to really underscore that so folks can get there as easily as possible.
Yeah, I would appreciate any little amount, because it costs $400 just to send one person to a full day of training.
Wow. All right, folks, you got it right there from Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Bruck. We're going to go on a short break here. We'll be right back, though. We've got the better part of an hour left with you this afternoon, folks, so don't go away.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you'll ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
I am an autonomous government agent here to steal your livelihood.
Not so fast. I'm Sovereign Filing Solutions.
And I'm the Sovereign. We're teamed up
to bring you
the truth without censorship.
Are you tired of being fed multi-million-dollar media lies?
Are you ready for the real story?
Sovereign Filing Solutions has teamed up with the Sovereign newspaper to make sure you get it.
And not the BS this guy behind me wants to feed you.
Take the step, help make the change.
Oh, come on, that's not even fair. How are we supposed to rule indiscriminately if you know what's going on?
Does the media ever deceive the public?
A white plane, a very big jet, was flying in an unusual pattern near the White House over Lafayette Park. Very slowly, it made one circle and then...
Are the media and their sources trustworthy?
New York State and New Jersey will get their first doses of the swine flu vaccine.
The H1N1 virus has made thousands of people across the country sick. Many have died. And some worry that it could grow into a full-blown pandemic.
Where does our mainstream media get their news? All this enjoyment is brought to you by All the Things Sweetened with NutraSweet.
There's a reason why we want to own these guns.
We're going to have to come together and take meaningful action to prevent more tragedies like this.
That was President Obama Friday suggesting it is now time to reopen the national debate on gun control.
The media tends to march in lockstep with the government.
Who is responsible when the media fabricates the news?
When the public is constantly fed messages that are potentially leading us into a war that may not be necessary, it's not fair to the American people, and it's not fair to journalism, because the truth isn't being told here. We found out that CNN International is actually making money from the Bahrain regime. They are a customer of Bahrain. Bahrain is paying CNN International to create content that shows Bahrain in a favorable light, to then air that content on CNN International.
Join us online at williamlewisfilms.com. That's williamlewisfilms.com.
We are so pleased to announce ESP Botanicals is now sponsoring Freedomizer Radio. They have a bath and body line of products made for keeping your skin beautiful and healthy, but it's also for psoriasis, eczema, rosacea, and dermatitis treatment. They are meticulously prepared skincare products made from the best botanicals available. Committed to buying only from the growers when they can and using the highest quality cold-pressed oils, botanical organic additives, the best steam-expressed essential oils, and the least processed carrier oils that are available in today's marketplace. Pamper yourself or someone special in your life. Give the gift of beautiful, glowing skin. ESPBotanicals.com. Thank you so much for supporting us at Freedomizer Radio.
We are back. You're listening to
We're back.
Vaccines in Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips and Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Bruck. Debbie, you have any last comments on that last topic here?
Yeah.
We've got maybe 15 minutes left here. I wanted to get in a couple of news items if we could.
Okay, great. I will have to do a special show about this issue because I think we can really go more in depth into it. I also want to just throw this out to you. I got breaking news. The IRS claims it can read your email without a warrant. So that means everything that you do on email, Facebook chats, electronic communications, it says the ACLU has obtained internal IRS documents that say Americans enjoy, quote unquote, generally no privacy. And that's basically life in America today.
We are not the free nation we think we are, or that many of us think we are.
Well, it's quite frightening. And this whole issue with the homeopathic remedies, it's basically a matter of money, because people are flocking to homeopathy, knowing and learning that it actually works to help heal and alleviate their suffering. And it takes away all of your you have to take the drug every day for the rest of your life? Gee whiz, I don't want to have to do that.
Yeah, in a sort of dark or backhanded way, it's actually a positive indication, because when the pressure opposing an alternative modality or alternative point of view, when the pressure gets stepped up, it's an indication that there's some progress being made on the other side, that they're trying to suppress or curtail or get rid of. So the fact of what you're pointing out, that homeopathy and just alternative and complementary healthcare in general has enjoyed a fast-growing surge in recent years, maybe even decades at this point. And the more that occurs, of course, the more of a threat that is to the marketplace for the pharmaceutical industry. So if they can find any way to just sort of take a single modality out of the picture altogether, that would be ideal. You know, let's just take one action here and wipe it out altogether. Let's not allow the marketplace to decide what modalities get used. Let's find some other means to avoid that market competition altogether. And so,
can I make one more quote?
Sure,
one more quote.
Sure.
Okay, this is one more quote from that article of the attack on homeopathy, which are two lawsuits against some of the biggest homeopathic pharmaceutical companies, the Allen versus Highlands, and the other one is De La Rosa versus Boron. Those Boron and Highlands are the homeopathic pharmacies, and there were lawsuits against them. In none of these cases did the plaintiffs say they were physically harmed. They merely claimed that the products did not treat them as they stated they would, and that they suffered minor economic loss, quote unquote, that's probably like $6, by purchasing the product. So apparently, if your cough medicine doesn't work well enough for you, you get to sue the company.
No. You can sue if the homeopathic remedy doesn't work, but you can't sue for a cough medicine. Now, I'm being facetious when I say this, but I'm not sure that it's untrue. I mean, when have you ever heard of anybody suing because their over-the-counter allopathic medicine didn't work or didn't work properly? Now, you might sue if you suffered harm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you might sue if you suffered harm. Sure, you could sue in that case, but
they're protected. They're probably protected.
Well, the point is, I've never heard of a lawsuit. This is just so absurd or bizarre. Take your pick. I've never heard of a lawsuit because of something, you know, because an over the counter medication didn't work. I mean, I don't know, Debbie, maybe you've been a homeopath for all your life or for decades, but I can tell you that in my past, I have bought over-the-counter remedies that didn't work. I don't mean homeopathic remedies. Now I'm talking about your standard, you know, drugstore allopathic medications or whatever. You know, I've had things many times that seemed to work in the way that I wanted or needed it to, and then other times it didn't seem to at all. And it never occurred to me to go ask for my money back, let alone to actually sue. I just said, oh, well, it didn't work on me. And maybe this is part of the brainwashing.
Maybe we
can, you know?
Maybe we can make that a new trend. We can,
well,
we can make it a new trend. We can say, listen, if your drugs are not working properly, you can take it back to the store.
Well, I think it would be thrown out. I think you'd get laughed out of court with something like that, or laughed out of the store if you went back and asked for a refund. They'd say, well, no, we can't do that. So I don't understand why or how somebody can do that here. But it's really critical. The fact that you mentioned that's critical in all of this is you say here are the two largest homeopathic pharmacies that are being sued. And the point here is this is a very deliberate and strategic these are very deliberate and strategic lawsuits. They want to go to the source. If you take out the source of homeopathic remedies, then all of a sudden there are no homeopathic remedies, you know, except for those people who go to the time and trouble to make their own. And this is one of the really cool things, I guess, about homeopathy is actually people can, I think it's, you know, rather meticulous and could be time-consuming, but people can make their own remedies. You certainly can't do that with allopathic medications. But you could do that.
Well, you could if you can get the substances that you need.
Right. And hopefully get ones that are not GMO versions. But
maybe that would be helpful.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, maybe we can come back and explore some of this in more depth at some point, because these are all very interesting things. You know, those people who feel that because of conditions in the world today that they need to begin to take steps to one degree or another to prepare for at least temporary self-sufficiency. You know, people are maybe stocking non-perishable foods or stocking some amount of silver in case there's some sort of financial collapse or whatever, you know, the so-called preppers out there. Having information about how to make homeopathic remedies, in addition to having a basic core set of homeopathic remedies, would be very wise, I think, for people, information, products and information for people to have. But let's see if we can talk real briefly about a couple of news items just to give folks a quick sense of at least some of what's going on in current events here with the vaccine issue. Debbie, I don't mean to put you on the spot. I'm just trying to be polite here. Is there any particular thing that you want to bring on first, or shall I just mention a couple of things of interest
with
me?
I think you must probably have some stuff. I wanted to let people know that I do have a full page of items that I collect over the week, and there's just so much stuff that bothers me, unfortunately, like this taping of farm animal cruelty becomes the crime. I mean, it's not vaccine related, but it seems like what the government is trying to do, state, local, federal, is they're trying to turn the tables on people who are speaking out. They're trying to turn the table on those people who are free thinkers, that are critical thinkers, that say, this is not right, I have to expose what is not good in society. And they're now making them the victim. And that, or the perpetrator of the crime, like this person who went into a farm and started taping the cruelty to the animals, and they became, I don't know whether it was indicted, but the laws that were put into place say, well, you went into a place that you didn't get permission to go in there and tape it, but they were exposing a horrendous crime. And I think that this is happening everywhere. I don't know, is there another article that's similar to that in today's news, in this week's news?
Well, first of all, Debbie, I want to thank you for bringing that up, and I want to say, even though something is not about vaccines in my book, it's related and appropriate for our show, partly because a large part of our audience here is the Freedomizer Radio audience, and they are all about these kinds of problems across the board. So I think it's something of interest to a lot of our listeners. But I also think it's not as unrelated to vaccines as you might think, because a lot of what goes on in the vaccine arena in terms of the underlying behaviors, the principles, the concerns we express are ones that apply to other areas. And it's important for all of us to recognize that while we focus on vaccines, what we talk about with vaccines are things that go on in many, many other areas. And the thing that you just mentioned brings to mind to me something that was very frustrating to me from as far back as law school.
Okay.
And it has to do with this concept of what I call getting off on a technicality. So
mm-hmm.
I use a metaphor here. You know, somebody's out drunk driving. You know, there's an accident. Somebody gets hurt or killed in the process. The police arrest the drunk driver. They forget to read him his rights. And he goes off scot-free because they made a technical mistake. And this kind of idea really, really bothers me. Because if you've got clear evidence that somebody committed a wrong, you do not, in my opinion, serve society by letting them go free because somebody made a mistake in the procedures. Now, because at the end of the day, if the evidence is there to convict the wrongdoer, then we need to convict the wrongdoer. Now, if in the process somebody oversteps boundaries, they need to be held accountable for that. But the overstepping of the boundaries does not undo the crime or wrong that was committed. And so this get off on a technicality. So for your example, the person who's committing the cruelty to animals that, let's just assume for purposes of the concept here, is a punishable offense, but because the person who uncovered it trespassed to get that information, well, the person who trespassed ought to be able to be punished for having trespassed under whatever the law provides for trespassing. But that should not invalidate the evidence that's against them. Now, if somebody is sort of randomly committing violations, procedural violations, on the hope that they will maybe one of these times, you know, catch a real wrongdoer, if that person's violating procedure and he's held accountable every time he violates procedure, he's not going to just go out there and randomly trespass, you know, until they find somebody who's committing animal cruelty, you know, the 37th time he does that. You understand what I'm saying? So by punishing both wrongs, you discourage both improper behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see that anyone's rights are protected or served by letting the guilty party off because the person prosecuting the case or someone involved in getting evidence does so in an inappropriate manner. You punish each, you hold each responsible for their wrongs. You don't let one wrong negate the other wrong. You know, two wrongs don't make a right here, you know, and yet that's what our legal system sometimes does, and it's frustrating to me. And I sat there in law school listening to a professor try to explain this and justify it, and it just never worked for me. Didn't work for me.
I think part of the problem is our governmental agencies are not performing their duties properly because maybe they don't have the right amount of funding, they don't have the right number of trained personnel. They're not going into the production line of the foods that we're supposed to eat to check the safety level of or the way the animals are being treated humanely or not. And I find that this is coming up against issues of our rights, our constitutional rights to freedom of speech, to censorship of freedoms, and that normally the news agencies, the investigative reporters, journalists would be able to do like an undercover, and they're not able to anymore. And I think about being able to do a citizen's arrest, and we're not able to do it anymore because of all of these laws that are protecting the bigger business to continue their criminal activity. I think this is what's really bothering me, if that makes any sense to you. They're making even a bill called the Animal and Ecological Terrorism Act prohibits filming or taking pictures of livestock animals to defame the facility or its owner.
Yeah, and that's so disturbing because in general principles of tort law, defaming or defamation, truth is a defense to defamation. In other words, you say something negative about someone, they file a lawsuit against you saying, you are defaming me. You come back and say, but what I said was the truth.
Yeah.
They don't have a case. So what you just described is a situation where they've taken away that defense. Doesn't matter whether
exactly.
Doesn't matter whether you're telling the truth or not, if you dare say anything negative about me. Now, this is something we're seeing creeping up. I don't know, maybe even creeping is understating it, but this is something that's happening within our government. People who criticize the government are increasingly mm-hmm. being characterized as pulled into the domestic terrorist label.
It says that exactly on the article. Violators would be placed on the terrorist registry. You're being blacklisted. You're being put on these lists. They're creating files and following you and whatever. So your freedoms are being limited, even if you didn't do anything wrong.
Now, if I were being prosecuted under that kind of a law, my response would be that this law is unconstitutional. I have a right to free speech, and the law should be stricken as unconstitutional, and who knows how that would play out. But we are living in a very disturbing time, Debbie, and I wish we could have more cheerful things to talk about. But
mm-hmm.
Maybe we should introduce them from time to time just to sort of, you know, keep our sanity. But we are rapidly losing our rights in many different areas. And what you're describing is a situation which is so contrary, so directly contradictory to the fundamental principles of liberty and freedom on which this country was founded. And yet when I talk to my own now former state senator about the Constitution and about her commitment, her oath to uphold the state and federal Constitution, her response to me is, oh, go talk to Senator so-and-so. He's into that constitutional stuff. So the oath that these people take to uphold the Constitution is meaningless. It's a ritual you go through before you can then go do whatever you want to with the laws. You're now in the position of power. And this is deeply disturbing to me, and it ought to be to everyone within the sound of my voice as well. And I don't want to leave people just feeling distraught and, you know, all dressed up and no place to go, to use another metaphor here. So let's talk real briefly for a few moments, Debbie, about where they can go now that they're all dressed up with the information that we convey week to week. On the vaccine issue, you can go to the NVIC advocacy portal. It's NVICadvocacy.org, NVICadvocacy.org. You can see a list of bills in states around the country, what's happening in the vaccine legislative arena in your state, and you can join for free to get involved legislatively. They will tell you who your representatives are, how to contact them, when to contact them, and what to support or oppose. Of course, you can decide that for yourself and should, but this is a site supporting an informed choice agenda with regard to vaccines. Great place to go. I think a lot of these issues, Debbie, are ones that ultimately have to be tackled legislatively. But when you expose corruption broadly enough, a lot of times just the exposure will cause people to tuck tail and run. And so let's not underestimate the power of just exposing, of transparency. So when you learn information, share it with folks. The news articles that we talk about on this radio program are often ones that come from or that are linked from the Pandemic Response Project website. Those three words all spelled out, pandemicresponseproject.com, pandemicresponseproject.com. Go to the news page. There's a link on every site to the news page. And take a look there at some of the articles. It's a summary of a lot of what's going on, current events and vaccines, with a focus on the legal and political issues. Debbie, we are already past break time here. I'm going to dive into the last break. And when we come back, Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community, will be with you to talk to you more about homeopathy. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brook. We'll be back with you shortly. Don't go away.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 911 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 911 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at williamlewisfilms.com. Get your DVDs today at williamlewisfilms.com. Educate against the police state.
Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high-fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to freedomizerradio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on freedomizerradio.com. Hey, guys, Proof here. Guess what? I just got a cell phone. Hey, for everyone that knows me, I'm not a fan of cell phones, but I just signed up with a company called Solavay. And Solavay is offering a plan right now with unlimited phone, text, and web for only $49 a month. Plus, if you refer a friend or two, you get a discounted rate for everyone you refer for as long as they have Solavay, not just for the first month, but for the whole time that person has Solavay. You sign up enough people, and Solavay pays you every month. What other cell phone company is going to pay you for service? Anyway, go to Solavay.com/freedomizer. That's Solavay, Solavei.com/freedomizer. Learn all about it. Plus, and another kicker, if you sign up three people under you, you'll get another month for free as well. Plus, they're going to pay you cash. Anyway, Solavay.com/freedomizer.
This is Debbie.
And I'm Michael, along with CD, the Constitutional Defender Dog. Is mainstream media giving you the real stories, or are they just telling you what they want you to hear?
Join us for Securing Liberty on Freedomizer Radio, Thursday evenings at 11 p.m. Central.
We'll be joined by great guests, discuss interesting and important topics, current events, maybe even a little humor. Be prepared for anything.
It will be 90 minutes of information sure to help you on your quest for truth. So join Securing Liberty at 11 p.m. Central on Freedomizer Radio.
Rob Nellen Live is a show exposing the fallacy of the right-left paradigm while promoting liberty and freedom. A plethora of guests will challenge the establishment, mainstream media, the New World Order, and hopefully you. Listen to Rob Nellen Live Sundays between 3 and 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time right here on the Freedomizer Radio Network.
Hi, this is Mary Lou Van Houten, co-host and producer of Getz and Rising on FreedomizerRadio.com. Join host Libby Gadsden and me every Monday through Thursday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time as we talk with cutting-edge guests about the truth of a variety of topics. We are 100% free speech. Gadsden Rising on Freedomizer Radio, because you can handle the truth.
We are back. Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with attorney Alan Phillips and Homeopathy World founder Debbie Brook. And we're at the last half hour of our two-hour segment each Thursday, beginning at 1 p.m. Eastern Time and 10 a.m. Pacific Time. and various hours in between for those middle time zones. Debbie, I'm going to pass
yeah.
it on over to you.
You are? Okay. Well, I think that I would like to talk about more uplifting things because we really have a rough time constantly talking about all the negativity that is out there. And, you know, my segment is about stress in our lives and reducing stress. So I want to say that we have to learn how to cultivate a balanced view. Take yourself away from the news every so often. If you have to create a routine that after a certain hour, you leave your computer, you turn off your TV, get involved in nature, go for a walk, just breathing. Take time to breathe and do some exercises. Just lay on your back and with your knees up and put your hands on your belly and just breathe deeply and think about how your body is taking care of you all day long and all night long without you really thinking about it. So it's really a matter of awareness in both what's out there, what causes stress, and what fights we need to actually fight for. Select one. Don't try and do all of them. And what you need to do to care for yourself as well as the planet. So it's a lot of it is our state of mind that is directly affected by where we place our attention. If our primary source of information is constantly this news media, then we can feel depressed and hopeless. And I'm going to be talking about remedies today that deal with worry. I'm going to give you a whole list of them and not go into great depths of them, but just to let you know that there are so many remedies out there homeopathically. The remedies are a little dynamo. They're dynamic boosts of energy to get you to take action in your world. The remedies are not doing the healing. It's you doing the healing when we talk about homeopathic remedies. So each of us will benefit from limiting our daily intake of media because it influences us and our mental talk, our stories that we tell ourselves all the time if you keep running those through your head. So one of the greatest medicines that we have for despair, and I just mentioned it, you can fill in the blank, it's action. When we act on behalf of what we love and those that we need, we know that we're doing our part. We can help to restore through gratitude. Say thank you. Say thank you to somebody who just gives you a smile or gives you a kind word or gives you lunch or whatever it is. And I'm constantly getting surprises. Just yesterday, I opened a package in my mail of a book somebody sent me. I don't even remember who he is or why he sent it to me, but it's all about, it's called Excuse Me, Is This Your Body by Abbas Gadimi from Pakistan. And I'll tell you what, I know I'm going to read it, and I thank him very, very much. But, you know, these are kinds of surprises that you get, and you have to say thank you. Also, when you have disasters that happen in your life, you want to have a sense of faith and renewal and knowing that you're doing the best that you can and offering people compassion and empathy when these stressful situations occur. So one person I know says we are the co-creators. We're the people who are creating our material world, what we see in our environment. And so we have to take responsibility and action for what we do and what we say and even for what we think. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about worry. If Alan's still there, if he ever wants to chime in, just let me know. If anybody wants to call me and say hello to me, you can be a guest by calling into 347-324-3704. And if you go to blogtalkradio.com/freedomizerradio, you'll be able to click that blue Skype button and call in. I'll look out for you on the dashboard. So we're going to be talking a little about worry and anxiety, which is not the best thing for our health because we just keep running these thoughts through our mind and affecting our emotions, and it doesn't really achieve anything positive in our life. And so we need to create some kinds of routines to calm down and get in touch with who we are and how we're feeling. It's a matter of self-training to reduce our anxieties, to see that what we think is not actually happening all the time, but just because we think it, our body recognizes it as some sort, creates a chemical imbalance. It floods the system with anxiety chemicals and hormones that is not helping our organ system. And these things can cause and lead to tension, restlessness, nervousness, a loss of appetite, sleep difficulties like insomnia, and even sweating, perspiration. You know, if somebody gets anxious, you can lose your concentration and your focus in your thinking. It can affect your heart through racing pulse, and it's all due to these anxieties that might lead to fears of things that might happen in the future or might happen to yourself or other people. And that can lead to these constant phobias. This is why it's a good thing to nip it in the bud and stop these anxious thoughts and this worry while you notice it and are aware of it. Get help. Find things that can reduce your anxiety, whether it's lighting candles or putting some nice aromatherapy in your room. So take your anxiety and events that happen in your life seriously. Think about ways that you can plan out your day so you can reduce these kinds of stresses and be as honest to yourself as you can. Be honest with other people also. If you're a worrier, make sure that those who are near you in your home, your work environment, will understand what's going on. So if you get anxious about certain things that they say or if they call you at inappropriate times, you are in control. You're in the driver's seat. You can just let them know that this is not helpful or helpful for you. Another thing that you can do is use your journaling. Write down what your worries. Get them off of your mind and onto paper. That's just another thing that you can do. So there's lots of tips that you can probably find around the internet that can help you to reduce your stress. One of the biggest things that I found, a lot of people find that stress, they carry it in their shoulders. So just take this moment now to feel how you're sitting. Are your legs crossed? Uncross them. Get your feet flat on the ground. Do you feel that you're hunching up your shoulders? If you are, just let them drop heavily down and do it a couple of times until they really drop and let go of whatever weight you're bearing on your shoulders. And let your head rise up tall. Straighten up your spine. Let it elongate. Think about energy just moving and flowing through your spine. And these are postures that you learn in yoga that help you to reduce stress. Do you notice that you're holding your breath? If you are, just let that out with a big sigh. And you can even do that now while you're listening. And just release the anxiety and worrying cares as you do that with your breath. And think about that the you take in the oxygen to rejuvenate your cells in your blood. And when you exhale the carbon dioxide, you're reducing the stress. You're releasing anything negative in the body. So that's a good thing you can do. Another thing you can do is reach for the glass of water. When you think that you're hungry, you may not be hungry. You just might need to replenish the water in your body and drink that. So those are some of the things that you can do to help yourself, to help your children, and to help your friends. We are, as humans, communal beings. We need community. Feeling rejected and disenfranchised and an outcast is not going to be healthy for you in any way whatsoever. So it's important to find community, people of like mind, who you can find trust and honest relationships with. Now I'm going to go ahead and go through a bunch of the homeopathic remedies that are typically used for these types of emotional stresses, especially for worry. And I've mentioned a bunch of them before, more in depth, but we're just going to run through them now. Aconite. Aconite is one of the top homeopathic remedies for feeling anxious, for feeling fearful, fearful of death. If you've had an accident, aconite, when the person says, I'm going to die, even recounting the moment of death. They suffer panic attacks, especially in crowded places. And so you might find that agoraphobia might be addressed with aconite. Always remember that you need to have a full case taken, a complete consultation to understand your unique expression of your vital force, of the situation, how you, your body, your mind, and your spirit cope with stress. The next remedy is called ambrogresia. This is for a person who's extremely shy, and they have anticipatory anxiety. A lot of remedies, homeopathic remedies, deal with anticipatory anxiety, whether you have to speak in public, perform in front of an audience, take an exam, fly on a plane. But for ambrogresia, it's very specific. These shy people are so easily embarrassed. They dread the pressure of performing in front of other people, at an interview, at an oral exam, at a social event, and even to the point where they need to hold their excretory functions until they get home into a private place. They will not go to the bathroom in a public setting for fear somebody might hear them urinating or going to the bathroom, and it would be extremely embarrassing to them. So you might find that when children come home from school and you ask them, did you go to the bathroom all day? And they say no, and they didn't because they're holding it in all day, obviously, which could lead to problems with their kidneys and their bowels not performing properly. That's ambrogresia. The next remedy is Anacardium orientale. This one also is for extreme anticipatory anxiety for taking exams. And also they have difficulty concentrating, very low self-esteem and fear of failure. So you can see how we are communal beings. This one, the Anacardium, is from the cashew nut, and they might have a, kind of like a split personality type. And they could have been bullied, or they can become bullies. They could be wonderful people, wonderful, wonderful friends, giving people, but they have a great number of fears and anxiety. The next remedy is Argentum nitricum. This one, again, anticipatory anxiety with restlessness. So I've told you already, aconite was a plant. Ambrogresia comes from an animal. Anacardium, also a plant or a nut. And this one, Argentum nitricum, is coming from silver nitrate, which is a mineral, elements on the periodic chart. And we put these drops into babies' eyes when they're born to prevent infection. But homeopathically, it has much deeper, not just the material use on the eyes, it has a much, goes very deep into the body, into the mind and heart and soul of the human being to help them release this restlessness before an exam, before an interview, when they have stage fright, or whether they are afraid to go up in a plane and fly in a plane for fear they might fall or get shot down or something. They get so wound up that they literally forget everything when the time comes. They might forget the information that they're supposed to write on the exam as their mind goes blank. And they also have some strange types of fears, things that seem a normal person might not have, that a building is going to fall on them, they might think, or something's going to run into them. And so you can see that each person has their own type of phobia, and these can be addressed with homeopathic remedies. The next remedy is arsenicum album. Again, a very restless type of personality might benefit from the gentle arsenicum album. They're so anxious. They're very fussy. They love to have their space organized and clean. They dislike being in a situation where they are not in control. And that goes and explains to you about why they're constantly keeping things clean and cleaning up after everybody and themselves and organizing everything. It's because if they do, it seems as if their space and their environment is a little bit chaotic and out of control. So that's why they're especially fussy and particular to details. They can perform very, very well in stressful situations. But again, if you might see children who are so anxious about their health, running from room to room, from parent to parent, looking for comfort, they also like to have small sips of water. And I can give you one good key tip about arsenicum album. If you've ever had food poisoning, this one is a great remedy to reduce and relieve any kind of vomiting and diarrhea. With that, you can imagine how anxious you are when you are, your physical body is actually poisoned. The next remedy is calcarea carbonicum. And calcarea carbonicum type personalities are extremely anxious because they're constantly worrying about themselves, about their security, about their family, and especially about their health. So it's a mineral, calcium carbonate or carbonate of lime. And some people would say that this remedy is needed for 90% of the population at some time in their healing journey. It works on many different things, from physical skin excrescences like warts, where the body is insufficiently nourished. It works for the glands, the skin, the bones, for exhaustion due to overwork. It's useful for strengthening the teeth and the bones, for tooth decay. It's helpful to increase the pituitary and thyroid function. So you can see these particular organs of the body dealing with our stress metabolism and thyroid function are so important to how we our energy level and how anxious or apprehensive we are. These types of people might be extremely shy and timid. They move slowly and they're constantly seeking protection. They want stability. They want order in their lives. And thus, when there is not that order that they need and seek, then all of their anxieties and fears may come to the surface. The next, one of the things is they are particularly worried about their health and worried about catching an infection. The next remedy is gelsimium sempervirens, a wonderful remedy for anxiety, anxiety about health, anxiety about going to the dentist. And what you would see in this person would be a great deal of sluggishness or restlessness, and they can even feel like they're paralyzed mentally and physically from the amount of anxiety that they hold within themselves, to the point where they look as if they have been drugged. They look dull and dopey, you know, like droopy eyes, and their body is all droopy. And especially before an exam, public speaking, or as I said before, going to the dentist, I have personally used this remedy for when we get a announcement from the World Health Organization that there is an influenza pandemic, and you're afraid to travel outside of your house, you're afraid to fly, you're afraid to go on holiday because you're afraid that you're going to get a disease, a contagious disease. This one is just marvelous. The next remedy is caliphosphoricum. Typically, we think about caliphosphoricum as a cell salt, a tissue salt, to help boost the immune system and rejuvenate the body. This is a mineral that's running throughout your bloodstream to nourish your cells. So if you're feeling extreme nervous exhaustion and feeling that anxiety, especially when you're worrying about your relatives, caliphosphoricum in the gentle 6X potency, these are all over-the-counter remedies that you can get at your health food store. So you do not need a prescription for them. You can go and seek them out yourself, of course. All of the shows that we produce on Freedomizer Radio or Homeopathy World Community or Blog Talk Radio, they're all educational information. You can go out and seek this information anywhere on the internet or from advisors, but we do recommend that you seek a professional physician, your healthcare provider, a homeopath who is knowledgeable and knows how to select for you the exact individualized remedy that will help you. The next remedy is lycopodium, another remedy that we call in homeopathic vernacular a polycrest. A polycrest remedy meaning that it covers such a broad, vast number of symptoms in so many people in the population. It's almost as if it covers a great deal of people, just like that other one, calcarea carb, that could cover somebody at some time, and 90% of the population at some time in their lifetime, because it's such a good one for helping your growth, helping your development, your mental development, your physical development as you're an infant growing to your teenage years. So lycopodium is an ancient plant, a club moss that has been around for millennia. And of course, it goes deeply into individuals because we come from the environment. We've handed this down over the ages. So lycopodium is for an individual who, again, is anxious, but they especially lack self-confidence. And typically when we say lacking things in our life, we might often think about minerals, but it could also be a plant remedy that's needed. And lacking of self-confidence, they put on a persona, a mask, that they are big and they are strong and they are powerful. And you know that lycopodium was used as an explosive to cover medicinal pills over the centuries. They've used it as a powder. And it does have explosive properties. Like, let's say you take club moss and you dry it and you're in the wilderness, you could start fires with it as kindling. So this club moss, this lycopodium, the personalities dread taking on anything new. They dread strangers. They dread going into new environments, taking a job interview, going to a party where they don't know anybody, taking an exam or a driver's test, public speaking or acting. Now, one of the things about them is once they get started, they're up there, they're doing it, they perform beautifully. They can do it. But it's the lack of self-confidence that gives them their tremendous amount of anxiety, which is typically reflected into their digestive system. It looks like I only have about a minute left to the show. So even though I've got three more remedies, I'm going to skip them up. I'll just list them. Nature Muriaticum, which I've mentioned in previous shows, Nux Vomica, also anxious and irritable, workaholics and addictive personality, and silica. I think I talked about silica last week. Silica also has poor confidence, bashful, shy, and strong-willed. So with this, if you ever have any questions, if you'd like to call in or talk to us, I really welcome your comments and feedback. Let us know if you enjoy the show. Let us know what you would like us to talk about. So we only have a minute left, and I think I'm going to head out. I can't find our music, so I could either hum or sing or just talk us out. Visit homeopathyworldcommunity.com for more information to learn about the Health In Show, which is broadcast live internet video on Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. We have fantastic experts in health. We have a show on Wednesday morning on Blog Talk Radio, Homeopathy World Community. We have the Thursday show with Alan here on Freedomizer Radio in partnership with Homeopathy World Community. And visit PandemicResponseProject.com. Okay, we're starting our next episode, and I'm going to head out for today. Be well. Lots of love and waves of awareness to everyone out there.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Heart Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopath Debbie Brock and Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist.